If your patient had a rash from amoxicillin in 1975, do you avoid penicillins altogether? Hello and welcome to this week's Urgent Bite, brought to you by the Royal New Zealand College of Urgent Care. My name is Guy Melrose, and today we're talking about low-risk antibiotic reactions. Taking an allergy history is a vital part of the urgent care consultation. Indeed, it is a required part of the Royal New Zealand College of Urgent Care's clinical notes audit. But very often, asking the patient about their allergies can create more questions, and therefore more treatment uncertainty. To discuss this clinical conundrum, I spoke with Dr. Josh Russell, an urgent care physician in Chicago, Illinois. So I'm sure everybody listening has experienced the situations where patients declare allergies, and it can make our life tricky when we want to prescribe a particular medication for a particular problem, and the allergy is not always very specific, and it's quite hard to determine whether it was actually a genuine allergy or not. And it's something we've talked about before, and it's something that I talk about in our peer groups a lot, and it certainly is something that as urgent care physicians without access to necessarily patients' full set of notes, we're a little bit in the dark. And fortunately, Dr. Josh Russell, who is an urgent care physician in the United States and the editor of the Journal of Urgent Care Medicine, has looked at all the evidence for the Hippo Education site and put it all together and come up with some conclusions that has changed his practice in this regard. And Josh is happy to talk to us about how it's changed his practice. So welcome to the podcast, Josh, and thank you for talking to us about this.
Of course. Yeah, Guy, it's great to be back. I think I can speak for any urgent care provider and clinician that it's rare to go a single shift where you don't run into this issue where you're about to prescribe the amoxicillin for an ear infection or the penicillin for strep throat, and whatever EMR you're using alerts you to the fact that the patient has a penicillin allergy. And until very recently, I think my practice was, well, I know my practice was to simply choose an alternate antibiotic. And in some cases, that was not such a big issue. And other times, it was picking a less effective antibiotic, and quite often an antibiotic that had a higher risk of an adverse reaction. And so when I was working on reviewing this segment that we did for the Urgent Care Wrap podcast with Dr. Weinstock and one of our pharmacist contributors, Dr. Brian Hayes, it really has changed my practice in terms of exploring penicillin allergies more and finding that very, very few of them are actually legitimate clinical allergies. And that has resulted in me removing penicillin allergy from many patients' charts and prescribing appropriate and more narrow spectrum antibiotics.
So how do you address this then when somebody, let's say I'm the patient and you're wanting to treat my strep throat with a penicillin, and I say to you, oh, when I was a kid, my mum said I had some kind of rash or reaction to penicillin, so I've always just said I'm allergic to it. How would you approach something like that?
That's perfect as a scenario, because I think that's probably the most common scenario. And if you look at the best data out there, it's less than 1 in 10 patients that report a penicillin allergy have a true sort of true sort of hypersensitivity IgE-mediated reaction to penicillin. So what you just described there is what would be classified as a low-risk reaction. And what I do is I explore the penicillin allergy history, and if it fits into that low-risk category, then that allows me to feel confident that I can prescribe a penicillin and even more so a cephalosporin, which is a sort of a separate topic that we might talk about. But if they've had, if they're reporting a clear low risk reaction, I can feel very confident that I can give them a test dose and or prescribe a penicillin and not have them have a serious adverse event.
So when you say a low risk reaction, do you have a set of a criteria that allows you to say that is a low risk?
Sure. Yeah. So the criteria that have been validated in the studies that you'll, I'm sure, include in the show notes are if that reaction was either 10 years prior, if the reaction is unknown, which is probably the most common story that we get, right? Or if there is a family member who's had a history of penicillin allergy, if they have had itching but no rash, if they've had GI or headache only, or any other non-specific, non-allergic type symptoms, like people will say they felt weird or, you know, it caused drowsiness. Commonly, people will say it caused diarrhea, which obviously is an expected reaction to virtually any antibiotic. So anything that falls into those categories, list of reactions could be classified as low risk, and it is very safe to proceed with trial of a penicillin if clinically indicated.
And then contra to that, the high risk things, presumably somebody who carries an EpiPen because they had an anaphylactic reaction, I'm guessing that's a high risk.
Absolutely. And you know, anaphylaxis, or if they've been to an allergist and had positive skin testing, or if they've had multiple reactions to multiple different beta-lactams, then it's worth staying away from the penicillin. But I will say this, a lot of these anaphylactic reactions are, I mean, I shouldn't say a lot, but almost all of them are to parenteral penicillins when IM penicillin was being more widely used. So you can feel much more confident if it's a borderline case that an oral penicillin is much less likely to cause a serious adverse event. And like I was saying to you before we started recording, the way that this has changed my practice is that now I feel comfortable doing a trial dose of penicillin or amoxicillin, whatever the case may be, while the patient is still in clinic, and just asking them to sit around for 20 or 30 minutes and observe them for a reaction. And that not only gives me confidence, but it gives the patient confidence too, that they're not being disregarded for their concerns of having the penicillin allergy. I say, let's, you know, if this is a concern to you, let's just give you a test dose here. We have all the medicine needed. If you have a bad reaction, we can treat you for it. But almost all the time, these reactions don't tend to reoccur in adults.
So you're observing them obviously for significant reactions. Is there any risk of a delayed reaction on the third or fourth dose out in the community? Was that covered in the studies at all?
Yeah, I mean, certainly that is a risk. It's also relatively uncommon. Those delayed type of hypersensitivity reactions tend to happen more in children. So if you are giving this to an adult patient, it's less likely. And I certainly tell them, hey, there's a small chance that you can have a delayed rash or something to that effect, and it's not going to be dangerous. It might be a little bit unpleasant, but you can stop the medication, then come back in. We'll find a different medication for you.
And do you apply this to all antibiotics? You've mentioned penicillins and cephalosporins here, but is this across all antibiotics, or indeed across all medications? Do you apply it to people who have declared an allergy to an anti-inflammatory, for example, or something like that?
I think that's, I will be honest, I haven't reviewed the literature in NSAID allergy. Is it in allergy and immunology world? Is it a completely separate topic? But what it has given me liberty and inspiration to start doing more of is probing allergies when the patient reports that they have an allergy to the best medicine to treat whatever condition they're facing. You know, for example, it may be that they have pericarditis and they have an NSAID allergy listed. And then, you know, it's mild GI upset, something to that effect. And this also gets to the larger topic that for better or worse, but more for worse in my mind, the most EMRs will list all adverse reactions that the patient ever reports as allergies. And the vast majority of adverse reactions are not allergies, and most of them are expected side effects. For example, like with NSAIDs, to have a little bit of GI upset, and that can be mitigated with pre-medication with an H2 blocker, for example, or by simply having them reduce the dose and make sure they're taking their medication with food.
And this goes to that point you made of these patients and maybe being denied the appropriate medication because of a declared allergy that's been persisting on their electronic records, and nobody's thought to question it further, and it's prevented them being given the correct medication for that particular condition, or a narrower spectrum antibiotic because of this. So it's changing the way you practice, and you're removing some of the allergy warnings that have been erroneously persisting on these patients' records.
Absolutely. And, you know, from a patient perspective, I think this is a patient-centered way to practice, because as a patient, you don't know the consequences. I mean, most patients don't know the consequences of saying, oh, I took that and it caused stomach upset. They don't realize that more often than not, once that enters their allergy list, especially as, you know, they're seeing the vast majority of clinicians being very, very busy and getting very prescriptive alerts from their EMRs if they try to prescribe a medicine that the patient's allergic to, rather than going back in and exploring that allergy. The vast majority of clinicians, I believe, have a practice for expedience to find another alternative medication. And so I want to, you know, encourage the listeners to feel empowered to do this, because you'll find that many of these adverse reactions or quote unquote allergies are very minor or erroneous completely. And you can, by removing that from the allergy list, now offer the patient not only in this episode of care the right treatment, but also free them from having the burden of being offered inappropriate medications or medications with a worse side effect profile because of an erroneous allergy on all their future presentations.
And that's true of a lot of medicine, particularly in time-pressured medicine like urgent care, that the quickest and easiest route to get the patient out of your room and move on to the next patient isn't always the best thing for your patient. And taking that little bit of extra time might at the time seem to be time consuming, but it might prevent them getting an unnecessary treatment. Certainly it takes longer to explain to a mum why you think their child has a viral illness that does not require antibiotics than it does to give them what they expect, which is a prescription, and get them out of the room and they're happy and you can move on to the next person. So taking the time is sometimes better to be taken, and you'll save in the long term and do better for your patients. So certainly asking about allergies is an important thing to explore, and you're happy from the point of view of the evidence there, and we will link to this in the show notes, or the papers that you looked at for people to read and familiarize themselves with. But the evidence supports what you're saying here, doesn't it?
Yeah, certainly. If the patient falls into that low risk category of a prior reaction to a penicillin, it is very well demonstrated to be safe to try a penicillin, especially an oral penicillin, and see if they're able to tolerate it. And the vast, vast majority of the time, the patient will be able to, and you'll be able to liberate them from receiving the wrong medication if they have another infection in the future, not only for this infection, but for all their future care when a penicillin is the best choice to treat their infection.
And you, I mentioned at the start that you did this for the Hippo Education podcast. So would you like to just say a little bit about where people can hear you talk on this topic and other topics relating to urgent care? Where can they find that, and how can they get involved with that?
Absolutely. Well, hippoeducation.com is the website, and Hippo Education puts out several urgent care products, including the Urgent Care Wrap podcast, which, again, this was a segment that I helped with doing the written summary editorial work, and I'm also a contributor on that. We also have the Urgent Care Bootcamp, which covers a plethora of topics, really the whole spectrum, in our estimation of the necessary basic fund of knowledge that you need to practice in urgent care. So for people that are interested in practicing in urgent care and don't have a clinical background in that or feel like they needed an update if they're coming from general practice on dealing with some more acute or higher acuity topics, that's also a great option. And we put out the Urgent Care Wrap podcast every month.
Excellent. So thank you, Josh, for joining us today. We've had a longer chat with you about urgent care in America and the various advances that it's making there, including the development or the continued development of the Journal of Urgent Care Medicine, of which I mentioned you're the editor-in-chief. So there'll be more to come from Josh, and for those of you listening, you'll be able to learn how you can get involved with that journal in another podcast. So thank you, Josh, for sharing this tip. And as I said before, in the show notes, there will be all the links so you can look into this information and see if it changes the practice the way it did for Josh. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Guy.
My thanks to Josh for talking to the podcast. In the show notes, you can find links to the papers that support his practice change, and also a link to the HIPPO education website, where he discussed this in more depth. Have a read and listen around this topic, and then this would be a good topic to discuss amongst your peer groups. Also, check out Josh on Twitter, at UCPracticeTips, or feel free to make any comments, questions, suggestions or corrections via podcast@rnzcuc.org.nz. In a future podcast, we will be talking to Josh about urgent care medicine in the United States and about his role at the Journal of Urgent Care Medicine and the HIPPO education. Now we'll be back again next week with another podcast. I look forward to seeing you all then, but for now, thanks for listening.